is so much of my life I've tried to struggle to be full of something and not half Filipino. I wanted to be full white. And I had this idea that I was always just half of what I needed to be. I was half Filipino, half white. You're never full of anything. You're not one, you're not the other. And what I'm trying to do now, and what I've realized by how these beautiful communities are just ready to embrace you and be like, hey, it's all cool, man, is that you're not you're not half Filipino, you're not half white. You're all Filipino, you're all white.
This is Drift, Immigration and Identity in America. I'm your host, Melissa Camara, a Hawaii-based artist and conservationist, and in this series of interviews, I'll be talking to immigrants, their descendants, and Native people to find out how homelands, new and old, are shaped by our ties to land. This time, we will be hearing from Josh Brandstetter, a young Filipino filmmaker, also based in Anchorage.
My name is Joshua Albeza Brandstetter, and I am a filmmaker and photographer. My mom is a Filipina. She's Ilocano. Mm-hmm. And my dad is white. He's Irish Austrian. And yeah, my mom, she grew up in Baguio. My dad was in the Navy for 20 years. And so he had been stationed in Guam. That's where he met my mom.
Okay.
They got married. My eldest brother was born in Guam. Then he was stationed in Illinois. I was born in Illinois. And then we were stationed on ADAC.
So your first memories are from ADAC then?
Yeah. When I was three, I believe, we were stationed on ADAC, which is about halfway across the Aleutian chain. And it's a nice little island where there was an Air Force base that had a lot of naval personnel. I could walk all over the island, and there was the ADAC National Forest, which was like 12 trees that the military planted and put a sign in front of. It was always, always windy. It was in a constant storm zone. The whole island was mine, and it was always stormy, and Mama would tell me, come home before dinner or the eagles will carry you away, because they were pretty big. It was a really big base, actually. There were over 3,000 personnel there, and which we can touch on. A lot of them were not weren't necessarily military, because they had a lot of civilian employees. Okay. And a lot of my best friends who were Filipino.
Were they service? Were they helping to do all the support for the military?
Yeah.
And so like, service maintenance jobs, other things
yeah.
like that?
So,
know, professional also?
It was a really big base. And so you have people that work the groceries, the commissary, people that work at the theater, and people that like, yeah, that keep the island running. There is also an indigenous population there, which I think is around, I think it's under 200, but yeah, there was a ton of military personnel and civilian employees working there. We lived there for either 3 or 4 years before, in 93, they started closing the base down, and my dad had hit his 20, so he was actually retiring, and they really loved Alaska. They were like, let's just move to Anchorage.
Tell me about what you remember. You would have been very young at the time, but how did ADAC contrast, or maybe later as you were growing up in Anchorage, how did it contrast with the big city?
I was telling my wife that, like, when you cremate me, hopefully after I pass away of natural causes, please just like put my ashes in ADAC, because that's like what I think of, and I romanticize it. In ADAC, it felt like it's my island. I can go anywhere I want. Mm-hmm. And then when I came to Anchorage, it felt like I can't even go down the street without. Because my mom can't see me anymore.
Yeah, right. Harkening to your mom's story, since my interest is of course Filipino immigration and culture. Did she ever speak about coming over from Baguio and what that was like? And
she wouldn't talk a lot about life in the Philippines when I was little, and now she does talk about it a lot more. But I remember when I was a kid, I remember like how strong her accent was, and so I would hear her speak in Tagalog or Ilocano, and her accent was a lot stronger. And definitely I feel like it, as I got older, it became more muted.
Was your mom working or raising you?
In ADAC, she was just raising us. Mm-hmm. And then when we came to Anchorage, She completed a degree, a bachelor's in accounting here in Anchorage. She didn't initially have a lot of family in Alaska. It was pretty much just her. The rest of them were living in the Philippines or in Guam. But one thing that's happened over the decades is we came to Anchorage and we helped a lot of her siblings move up here.
When you say your family members from the Philippines, your mom's side, were living with you folks at different times while they were getting established, did that all feel, how did that feel for you, you know, growing up with so many extended family living in and out of your lives and in your home and so forth?
I loved it because mm-hmm. my uncle would play like Nintendo 64 with me at night when we're supposed to be sleeping. We'd play Mario Kart. And then he'd stay up way too late playing video games. And he was the one with like the fancy sweaters and the mullet back in the 90s. So he was a cool uncle. Looking back, I'm like, wow, we had like almost a dozen people living in our house at one point.
Right. I mean, really a little bit unusual in contrast to the quote unquote American nuclear family. You know, I mean, and I've heard this so many times with you know, our Filipino brothers and sisters out there that it's just everyone's together and it's just how it is. When you were growing up, you know, with your dad being white and your mom being Filipino, were you aware of the biracial mixture, you know, in terms of your identity?
I do film, so I've always been obsessed with like movies mm-hmm. and watching them. And as a kid, you're always trying to find out, you're looking for role models, looking for people to aspire to be like. And so you have like the Steve McQueens and the Harrison Fords and the James Garners, and you got all these guys that are like white heroes that are just perfect and, mm-hmm. and smart and charming and tall and strong and white. And then I'd like, well, they don't look like any of us. and like, I don't look, a lot of Filipinos were like, you know, are you Filipino? Why do you say kamusta? I was like, no, I'm half. And then all my white friends though would be like, what are you? Are you like Puerto Rican or something? And so it feels like you're kind of trapped in this limbo. That's something I can put into words now. Mm-hmm. But like when I was a kid, I just knew that I wanted to be cool. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was missing.
So did you have to always explain your ethnicity to people? Were they asking about it or yeah. would it come up yeah. later?
No, they'd always ask about
always
it.
Right. They're like, yeah. What are you?
But when I was in Anchorage, I ended up going to like a private school in high school, and it was like a very disproportionately white demographic. Mm-hmm. It was a private Christian school. And so I remember just like, if you weren't white, you were very much in the minority mm-hmm. and kind of the butt of the jokes and stuff like that. I know high school can always be harsh, but one of the things is like, they'd always ask you like, you know, you're Puerto Rican, right? it's like everyone says that. I'm like, no, I'm Filipino. And you get called, there'd be jokes and your friends would make jokes and it would be well-intentioned, like as a way of socially bonding, but it would be at your expense. And then there were always the people that weren't your friends that they would love to learn everything about you so they could figure out how to use it against you.
Oh,
and it could
yeah.
be hard.
I mean, kids are cruel. And then like on the racial side of things, you add that to the mix. It's like, oh my gosh, all you want to do is fit in, right?
Yeah.
When you're that age, before you've even formed your own identity.
Yeah.
You became, you know, you were acutely aware that you were different. Were there any Filipinos in your high school at all? Or were you the only one?
In my high school, I was the only Filipino in my grade.
Okay.
And then I believe there were two other Filipinos that at also going to this high school when I was. Mm-hmm. It was, like I said, it was a small Christian private school. Like I had 30-something people in my graduating class.
Oh, okay, so it was really teeny.
Yeah, and there were maybe 200 students in the whole high school. If you were the black kid or the Korean kid or the Filipino kid, then you were automatically stood out.
Yeah, I bet. So did you connect with your Filipino culture through your mom and then also with your dad's ancestry? Did you connect with his ancestry as you were growing up too?
I was always trying to find like I said, that sense of identity. And so I would try to adhere to my brandsetter side of the family. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there was a period in my youth where I just like, I learned everything I could about it. I was the guy who was like Googling our family crest. I learned everything about how like the Brandstetters lived in Missouri and they lived next to Laura Ingalls Wilder or whatever. and they came over like before America was a country. They came over on they were Brandstetters on the Mayflower, and they lived in Austria, and they had their own coat of arms and their own land, and like, and they were served some king, and then they got conquered and they had to flee. I wouldn't talk about the Albeza side. I would say, oh, I'm a Brandstetter, when people would be like, oh, you're Filipino, and I'd be like, well, I'm really white. I'm really half. I'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm really white, because I would say something which is, not at all accurate, but I'd be like, because it shows how ignorant I was at the time, I would say that, you know, all Filipinos are like half Spanish, and so I'm really three quarters European. And it was just a desire to not be who I was. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking about the movies, you know, like I'd see these white actors, these white heroes, and I wanted to be whiter, so I like didn't want to tan in the sun, because yeah, easy bake. Mm-hmm. And I would like pull my lips in just to like be like, what can I change? Mm-hmm. I would want to talk different. I wouldn't want to learn Tagalog. My mom wanted to teach me Tagalog. She's like, Joshua, do you want to learn Tagalog? And I was like, I want to go play outside. So, yeah.
Do you ever think she got the sense that you were, you know, not embracing that side because of just how much a minority you and your mom were amongst other people here in Anchorage?
I don't know. I've never asked her that.
Okay.
And I don't think she's ever voiced that she's ever taken it personally. Mm-hmm. There was a big period where it seemed like I just didn't hear her talk Tagalog. And she wouldn't. I remember then in the 90s on ADAC, like, and I have VHS tapes, which I was going through old family tapes. Mm-hmm. And she sounded different than she does now. And she would be on the phone for so long talking to her family and cousins, and just Ilocano just constantly. Mm-hmm. And
you know, getting to where you are nowadays, tell me about how you decided to go into film and documentary.
I would have friends that would always like that were working in LA, and they would always like send me their scripts and stuff, and we used to shoot the stupidest stuff in the woods and like with lots of red Kool-Aid, and like someone would grab their uncle's BDUs. I remember my parents were always like, you should become an attorney like Lolo. And so I was gonna go to law school, and that didn't happen. But I would always get these scripts, and they're like, I thought to myself, you know, I should just, my friends are always asking me for help. You know, when am I gonna do something for myself? Mm-hmm. And so I started doing stuff locally, and one thing turned into another, and now I'm like doing documentary work for like Time and Sundance, and locally for different organizations. I think a lot of it kind of stems from my desire to find identity, feeling like I just for the longest time didn't know where I fit in, but also wanting to fit in, wanting to have a sense of community, and feeling like I'm sort of just an island. And so now I'm working on several projects that have to do with looking at like how we have a lot of intergenerational homes where we really care for our own, or like Filipinos that are working here that on work visas, or really taking a lens to how our Filipino community is so diverse, so widespread in Alaska. And I really want to celebrate that, because I'm also just trying to find my place.
What do your parents think about you diving into these topics? Well, first of all, how long have you been looking at that, and what do they think?
My family's been super, they've been really supportive. Now that my mom knows he's not going to law school.
Well, when did you make that decision?
Initially I had like, my plan was to go to law school, and I was going to school down to Lower 48. I think I just felt like a lot of familial pressure to like meet that expectations. Because my Lolo, Restituto Albeza, he went to school in Manila. He got his law degree. He was really successful there. He was really involved in the community. He ran for like the Guam Senate at one point. He was very involved in the community, and I really didn't admire him when I was younger, because I saw him as like what I didn't want to be. Mm-hmm. And so I like didn't want to sit down and hang out with him. I didn't want to hear his stories. But like, as he got older and we were caring for him, I realized that, like, oh my goodness, there's this whole relationship with this person that's really fascinating and really important. And how do I make up for all these years? So I tried to learn as much as I could about him. They passed away right before the pandemic. So I'm actually glad that they didn't have to go through all of that. But my mom and I also, we cared for them for like a decade. My Lolo just like, he didn't really take care of his health, and he got a brain infection because of gingivitis and lost everything. He had to quit law, obviously. He couldn't take care of himself. And then Nelly, my Lola, she was caregiving for him in Guam by herself. And then like, she had a stroke and they didn't find her till the next day. And so both my Lolo and my Lola, they just like, everything they had, they just couldn't take care of themselves. We brought them up here and cared for them for 10 years.
Oh, right.
I feel like every day I learn more about them, and mm-hmm. some of it's complex and I have complicated feelings about, but.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. That's my story too. It's challenging because memory is so fallible and the pieces are incomplete, and you know, we struggle with that. But the thing that really gives me great comfort is that we don't have to be empirical about it all the time, you know, and we can really, they live on through us and our creative endeavors. And I think that gives me great comfort to know that they would be so proud of the work that you're doing and the things that, you know, you're celebrating.
So my Lolo, I've learned this after, but he wanted to go into the arts. Mm. Also actually wanted to go into the arts. He wanted to do movies and theater and all that. Mm-hmm. But when he was in Manila, he did an audition and he just, whatever reason, bombed it. And then he was like, okay, I'll go to law school instead.
And you were talking about your mom coming over. We were talking earlier about how she lived through the Marcos regime. Do you know very much about her experience, you know, with the People Power Revolution and all of...
My family, they came over, they left the Philippines in the early 80s. Like, yeah, my grandfather, Lolo, he went to school in Manila, went to law school, and he grew up with, like, very meager, what's the right term? But, like, he didn't grow up with a lot.
That was what I was wondering, like, what their social economic status was when they left.
But that was his. My Lola, she actually talked about how they owned a lot of land. One of my uncles talks about remembering, he was like, I could just walk for forever on our land, and like the mountains were ours until the government took them back. It sounds like during that period, like my family did have a lot, and then they went to Guam in the 80s. And so I've always wondered, like, why did we move to Guam? That's something I'm still trying to figure out completely, but it gives me complicated feelings over everything that's been happening, because I remember growing up how people would talk about Marcos, and then like to feel like everyone around me did a 180 in the last couple of years has been like, why, what changed?
So when you say 180, what do you mean by that?
It seems like because they were all very like pro-Marcos this mm-hmm. last election, and like mm-hmm. he's going to save, mm-hmm. he's going to fix the economy, yeah. and he's going to save everything and make it better. And I remember how people talked about him when I was a kid, and I'm like, what changed? Why are, you guys right. talked about how his family stole all the gold.
It's really complicated. You know, I mean, he was a Philippine president, and you know, the idea, my grandfather was a big supporter. I asked my dad, why did he support him? And he said, well, because he probably thought, you know, the fighting's going to stop between the communists and the state. And of course, we know how things went. But it's really complicated. And then like, if you're employed by, you know, if you're learning your living.
Yeah. It's hard to reconcile, you know? That like, I have friends that I know have been hurt by everything from the 80s. Mm-hmm. And that we had such an influx of Filipinos that came here during that period. And I've talked with them, and they talk about what they were trying to, the harm they were trying to avoid. And then trying to reconcile that, like, what is my place in all of that?
Right.
And, like, have I benefited from harm that's been caused to other people? And how do I rectify that? Do I need to rectify that? Has it benefited me? Or, how, like, also, like, my Lolo, everyone talked about how he was so... He was always helping the community in Guam, and they were like, he was never rich because he would let people pay him in fish. And like, mm-hmm. and like, he was always had such a big heart for everyone, and they would mm-hmm. call him like the crying lawyer because he was always so emotional for everyone. But also, like, I don't know. I feel like there's a whole man there that I just don't know everything, and I want to know everything.
Yeah. And we can sometimes never know, right? It's like I was saying before, we just, do as much as we can. I mean, I'm thinking about my friend whose father was killed, who was in on the Philippine military side, and, you know, he just was a good man. He was absolutely was a good man, you know, and he was gunned down in the streets, and he was a man of principle. He didn't take bribes, even though everyone around him did. And you know, because you worked for them doesn't mean that you're a bad person, right? And yeah. So or your descendants are either. It's just how things are, and it's a long, long legacy of colonialism, you know, and changing figureheads over time. And
It's hard to reconcile when you don't have all the information. And mm-hmm. there's a part of me that wants to know. I just want to understand. I want to understand why they left. I want to understand why we have family that's still there. I want to understand why the narrative about everything that happened was one way, and then with this election, everything changed. It feels like I've always felt like I'm an outsider trying to find my sense of community. Mm-hmm. And in some sense, I feel like as I've shifted to feeling like I'm more a part of my community here, in some ways I feel like I've become more of an outsider in other communities.
I do want to ask you about that. Do you feel more Irish or Filipino? Where do you stand with your identity? And I want you to tell me about it.
I mean, what does identifying as American really mean?
Exactly, right?
Outside of like, like location, because we're just, as it is, we're just a melting pot, of course. But like, that isn't, you can't really, how do you really define an American unless it's like a flag on the back of a truck yelling yeehaw? I mean, like, I guess there's some versions that are very overt and more, that can be more aggressive, but like, America isn't really one thing. Neither is the Filipino, and I've tried to understand that and be really respectful, because I go to Costco, and like, and all the people at the cash registers are all Filipina, and I'm like, kumusta, and I'll talk to them, and I'm like, are you like, you speak Tagalog? And they're like, oh, yes, but like, are you Ilocano or whatever? And they're like, no, I'm Pangasinan or Visayan. Or, and so I know that Filipinos are also not, we're not a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, if I'm being honest, I feel more Filipino. And I think that, again, stems from a desire to find community. And what I found is like, our Filipino community here in Alaska, I mean, it's the third biggest minority demographic, or I'm sorry, the second biggest minority demographic, because the demographic breakdown is like, white is the largest, indigenous, and then Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just, by trying to go to the parades and try to go to the potlucks, mm-hmm. and like, and just make friends and be a part of the Asian community, and that in turn turning into being a part of the Phil-Am community, there is a community here, and it's so strong. I feel like AFA, which is one of the big groups, Phil-Am groups, it's like they have, it seems like they're having a parade or a dance every other week. And so by a desire to just have that community tied to my heritage, I feel like that community's really shown up. And I feel really empowered by that. I feel a strong sense of belonging. And I just think it's really beautiful. And so I do identify as a Filipino.
Do you feel as though you traverse different spaces depending on who you're with, or you're like fixed, you know, totally in this one particular, you know, area that you are exploring now?
No, that's a good question. So I'll tell you what, when I was in Europe, I did not identify as an American. Mm-hmm. I told people I was an Alaskan. Nice. They'd be like, "Are you American?" I'm like, "No, I'm Alaskan." "Oh, okay. Come over here. Let's hang out. Tell me about Alaska." That really helped. But yeah, I do find that. Is code switching the right term?
That's the word I use. I think it's fine.
Yeah, how I code switch depending on groups I'm in. And I've tried to be more cognizant of it. I know I don't think it's something I'm necessarily doing now that I haven't done when I was like a teenager. It's just something I'm more aware of. And I really go back to like how my mom would navigate groups. She would talk like a white person with other military families, and they would chat, and then she'd get on the phone and like that Ilocano would kick in and her accent would kick in. And I think one of the things that really, really stuck out to me is how her accent would kick in. She'd be talking to Lolo or Lola on the phone back in the 90s. They weren't living with us. And then she would get off the phone and that accent would linger. And she would be like Joshua, and she would have that. And then I would just like, I was a little kid, but I would just pay attention as it would like slowly taper off, and she would like fully transform back into my American mom. Mm-hmm. But my Filipino mom, my Ilocano mom, was still there a little bit.
I think it's wonderful. It's so rich, isn't it?
Yeah. For so much of my life, I tried to, and this is, I think, probably the biggest thing I'm trying to overcome, is so much of my life I've tried to struggle to be full of something, mm-hmm. and not half Filipino. I wanted to be full white. And I had this idea that I was always just half of what I needed to be. I was half Filipino, half white. You're never full of anything. Mm-hmm. You're not one, you're not the other. And what I'm trying to do now, and what I've realized by how these beautiful communities are just ready to embrace you and be like, "Hey, it's all cool, man," is that you're not half Filipino, you're not half white. You're all Filipino, you're all white.
Exactly. Yeah. And we are in our own unique ways, because we're all individuals, right? We're just transforming into something different.
But there is that gap, and I feel like I'm still playing catch up. I don't speak Tagalog. My mom asked me, "Do you want to learn Tagalog?" And I was like I said, I want to go play outside. But my kids know more Tagalog than I do. And I'm waiting for Duolingo to start the Tagalog one. They said they're announcing it this year, but like, I am trying to learn it, and I want to learn it. And I'm working with, I have some friends who like, they speak to me in Tagalog whenever they see me, they teach me some words, and I'm trying to learn more. And so now when they say salamat, I say walang anuman. I feel like Filipinos in America, at least, are really coming into their own. We've been here for a long time, for 300 years. Someone told me that Canva, like one of the people that made that app, is Filipina. And like, you've got Filipino filmmakers who are like going to Cannes and going to Sundance, like Isabel Sandoval, who is such an amazing artist. There's a lot of power in just seeing that, like, you have a place there too. You have a place on that platform. You have a place on that stage. I think goes a long way. And I wish I had had that when I was a kid, but that's what it is. But to know that my kids get that is so inspiring and so powerful.